Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
You know that feeling when you walk into your home, take a deep breath, and feel new? Well, that's what it's like to use Clorox Scentiva. Because Clorox Scentiva smells like coconut, cleans like Clorox, and feels like energy. It'll elevate any cleaning routine to not just clean, but also make every room smell like a tropical coconut getaway. Discover how Clorox Scentiva's powerful clean and refreshing scents can transform your space. Get yours in coconut or other fabulous scents at a nearby retail store.
I'm Nedra Glover Tawab, and you need to hear this. Today, we have a very exciting guest. Lisa Marciano wrote a book that changed my motherhood. I was taking a walk one day, and I was just looking for new audiobooks to listen to in a season of parenting where I really needed some support. And your book, Motherhood, popped up. And it was so great on audio that I bought a physical copy. I was like, I have to highlight this. I have to highlight some of these things that you said. And about a month ago, you came out with a new book, The Vital Spark. And I was reading it and I was telling my team, I'm like, we have to email her. We have to have her on the pod. Your way of writing is very magical. Your storytelling, you know, the client stories, your personal stories, the way that you weave things together helps me to understand that it is okay to be an imperfect parent and that there is this level of gentleness that we must have with ourselves as well as a level of authority. So I just want to say how much I appreciate you and your writing. One of the most interesting things is I'm not typically a science fiction or historical fiction sort of person. And a lot of your stories are rooted in, I don't know, what would you say, Lisa?
Well, certainly there's the fairy tales. So when you said it was magical, I mean, what a lovely thing to say. But of course, fairy tales are magical. They have so much magic in them. So there's that element. And then, yeah, I mean, I did try to bring in stories of real life people, both my own stories and my clients, obviously, but also, you know, some historical figures, because it just makes it, I don't know, it just makes it clear that these issues that we grapple with every day are universal. And that is always so grounding to realize that.
Yeah. So I want to go book by book. Let's start with motherhood. Can you tell everyone what that book is about centrally?
Well, I'll answer the question by telling the story of how the book kind of grew in me. So my kids are 2 years apart and my daughter was, you know, 2.5 or something. And my son was like 6 months old. And that was just a really, really hard time. Like having an infant and a toddler was just really hard. And so, you know, one day it was like 7 o'clock in the morning. Everyone had been awake for 2 hours. There was nothing planned for the day. It was freezing cold. I live in Philadelphia. It was December. It was just, you know, it was going to be like hours before the library was open even. I was like, oh my God, how am I going to get through this day? And I just had this thought. I was like, God, everything about motherhood is so hard. And then this thought just popped into my head. And the thought was, yes, and I'm learning so much as a result. It was just like that. And I thought, wow, that is such an interesting idea, you know, that the way that I'm struggling is actually changing me and helping me grow. And it was related for me to Jung's idea of individuation, because I'm a Jungian analyst and I was in Jungian training at that time. And individuation is this idea that we continue to grow and change throughout the whole lifespan. So I thought, well, gosh, I want to read something about that. Like, who has talked about how motherhood helps you grow? And I couldn't really find that book. I mean, people have written some stuff that was close, but I couldn't find it, especially not from a Jungian perspective. So I, you know, we're so used to seeing books about how to parent, or there's a whole lovely bunch of memoirs about what that experience is like for an individual. But really thinking about motherhood as a life experience that helps you get to know yourself better. I just was really interested in that. And that is what I hoped to explore in the book, is how does this teach you about yourself?
Well, I can say, you know, in reading the book, what I realized is all the ways in which my life sort of expanded, like my sense of time, my ability, my body.
Yes.
So many things expanded in this way that I didn't know was possible. Mm-hmm. Like the things that I get done in a day now, my single, no kid having self, I couldn't imagine, because I was like consumed at that point, right? But now it's like, I don't even know how I did this. I remember when I delivered my first child, I had a rush of adrenaline right after delivery. And I called so many people, and I found out later, like people were telling me, like, you called me as soon as you, because I was so blown away.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, oh my gosh, I just pushed a baby out and it's like right there. And I got up and I walked to the bathroom and I'm like superhuman. Like, yes. I've never felt this level of power before. Yeah. And 1 week later, I was very disempowered by the lack of sleep.
Yeah, like the high highs and the low lows, right?
1 week later, I was like, I've never felt this tired in my life. But when I delivered, I was like, oh, let me call this person from elementary school.
That's just great.
Oh my gosh. I was like on cloud nine. And yeah, there are some highs and lows and lots of days like right in the middle. And the power of motherhood, like to think about the ways in which it has shifted my career and how I work. I think it's just such a wonderful thing to assess the way that you can be so protective of this little person, how encouraging that is for you to take some of that and be protective with yourself.
Exactly.
You know, there was a moment when I noticed how well my toddler ate and how terrible I ate.
Wow. Yes.
Like, I was like, I'm pureeing, you know, the organic vegetables. And I'm like, nothing but sweet potatoes from the best vines for this baby. And I'm like, girl, you need to shift your diet.
Yeah, yes,
like,
yes.
There's room. There's room. So one of the things that I love about your book, Motherhood, is how you invite us to think about these sort of taboo topics in motherhood, like the envy, the jealousy, the resentment. Can you tell me how you've seen people sort of struggle with the role of being a human being as well as being a mother?
Well, and of course, I talk a lot about anger in the book, and that is not a coincidence, because I was definitely an angry mommy a lot of the time. So I was really interested in anger, because, you know, I tried everything to like not yell. I tried everything. I really wanted to yell less. And I kept on trying, and I don't know that I ever cracked it, Nedra. I never really got that much better, but I certainly kept trying. But I was interested in, like, so, well, what does it mean to yell at your kids? What is that really about? What happens in that kind of relational moment? And I certainly worked with lots of moms who were angry at their kids a lot and yelled at their kids and would then come into my office and just kind of berate themselves for it, like just flay themselves for the fact that they yelled at their kid. And so, I mean, I think that what I talk about in the book is just, you know, that there are some good things about anger. I mean, it's not like I'm recommending go off and yell at your kid, but I don't know that it's good to never get angry at our kids. I think that anger has a positive purpose and it can definitely be damaging, but there's a role for repair. And, you know, getting angry at your kids is kind of a universal. And so I was interested in exploring that in particular and some of the other things that you were talking about. You know, the thing about Jung's psychology that's so helpful to me is I really think it encourages us to understand that all parts of us belong. It really encourages a kind of self-acceptance. And again, not that we can't always try to do better, but if we can be, you know, gentle with ourselves, that's a word that I used it before, and that is a word that I come back to a lot in my clinical practice. And even when we're not, you know, kind of winning Mother of the Year that day, and because maybe we're tired and maybe we've lost our temper, or maybe we, you know, feel resentment or envy of another parent and her relationship with her husband or something like that, you know, can we be curious about it? Can we turn toward ourselves with curiosity and acceptance and see what we might be able to find out about any of those experiences? Because all of those feelings are teachers.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of two clinically studied ingredients in one revolutionary formula. Berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. And right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
There are two things you said that I'd love for us to expand on a bit. One is, can you share with the listeners Jung's psychology, just some basic things about that approach? Mm-hmm. We're clearly both therapists, so yes, we have some understanding but for the folks who are listening and might not be aware of that approach, I think there are some other things that are, you know, pretty general cognitive mm-hmm. behavioral, you know, so if people have therapy experience, there are some things you may understand, but I would like to dig a little deeper into mm-hmm. this approach.
So Carl Jung was a Swiss psychiatrist. He was born in 1875, so he was a contemporary of Freud's, and he was a colleague of Freud's in the beginning, and he was kind of there at the beginning of the founding of psychoanalysis. But he and Freud eventually really parted ways, and you know, Jung very much developed his own thinking about the unconscious and how it relates to consciousness. And some of the words that you might know of that he kind of coined are archetype, collective unconscious, synchronicity, shadow, introvert, extrovert. So some of his ideas have really kind of found their way into the mainstream. But I think where Jung differs a little bit from other kind of psychodynamic schools, approaches to therapy that psychodynamic means that you believe there's an unconscious and that we're influenced by the unconscious, okay? And there's a bunch of different psychodynamic schools. But, you know, Jung's big message is that we're all growing toward wholeness. And sometimes we get blocked in that growth toward wholeness, and that's when symptoms occur. But ultimately, our being wants to grow and wants to self-actualize. So it's a very kind of optimistic view of the psyche. And it's also a view that has a lot of room for spirituality in it. And there's a real emphasis on meaning. Jung felt that we couldn't be psychologically well, most of us, unless we had a sense of meaning and purpose. And I think that's mostly true. So
thank you for that. And the other thing is envy. Mm-hmm. You know, I see envy as a very important emotion, but it's also one that is very hard for many people to acknowledge experiencing, mm-hmm. whether it's with their children, with their friend, with their partner, with their neighbor who has a family. It can be hard to acknowledge it, but we often unconsciously act it out.
Yeah. It is so, it's such a powerful and uncomfortable emotion. And I do make a distinction between envy and jealousy, which is, it's kind of hard to distinguish, and probably different people define those two words differently. But I think of envy as that sense that you really, it's darker, I think, than jealousy. You know, envy is that you want to kind of, that you wish the person ill because they have something that you don't have. Whereas jealousy is more like you want the thing they have. I'll tell you a little personal story about jealousy. I have a friend, a wonderful close friend. We've known each other for years and years. She's really important to me, but she is kind of a charmed life. She is very wealthy. She does all kinds of fabulous things, lots of travel. She's got a beautiful house. She has a fancy car. Years ago now, we were talking and she was mentioning some fabulous things she was up to. And then she said, you know, I'm going to be writing a book. And I noticed that I really wasn't jealous of the trip to Europe. I really wasn't jealous of the new car. But when she said that about writing a book, oh, this hot jealousy ran through me because I really wanted to write a book. And it was so clarifying because it's like, yeah, it would be nice to have a new German sports car, but I don't really care about that. You know, we're only jealous of things we actually care about. So jealousy can be such a helpful emotion because it shows you what you really want.
Sometimes, it uncovers.
Yes. Sometimes, I think especially women, it can be hard for us to even know what we want sometimes. Mm-hmm. So I think that jealousy, as painful as it can be a friend. Envy it's a dark feeling to feel, and it's a dangerous feeling to be on the other end of, because, you know, it really does inspire people to hurt other people. And I think that there was a time in my life when I was kind of naive about that. I was like, well, who would ever feel envy of me, first of all? And secondly, like, no one would really actually wish me ill simply because, but actually they will wish you ill, and they might act on it. So you can't be naive about envy.
Mm. You tell a story in the Vital Spark around the emotion of envy, where the character in the fairy tale is just not aware. Yes. Of the ways in which she is envied by her mother. Is this the story of Snow White?
Yes.
It's the story of Snow. I had never understood Snow White in that way until I read it in your book.
Oh, that's great.
Okay. I had to dig back into my second grade mind. I'm like, is this the story of Snow White? Mm-hmm. I let my kids watch this movie. Like, it was very dark.
Yeah, it is dark.
A very good story around how she just could not believe that her mother mm-hmm. would envy her and go to such extents to poison her, to, you know, have her killed and all of these things. And she just kept trusting and trusting. And you spoke about the dangers of us being so trusting and mm-hmm. how there are times where we need to really tap into our power to be courageous and confront people, because the trusting that we have sometimes can be unearned, and we should have a little bit of cautiousness and sometimes a little bit of leeriness mm-hmm. around, you know, certain people and in certain situations, and that can be to our benefit.
Yeah, I mean, we all have things we want to believe about the world, and we have to be careful that we're seeing the world as it is, not as we wish it were. So Snow White mm-hmm. is such a great story for that, because, of course, in the original Grimm's, it's not her stepmother, it's her mother who's mm-hmm. envious of her. And, you know, it is true that sometimes we might feel jealousy or even envy of our children. I mean, that's such a taboo thing to admit, but I think it's a normal experience to feel some of that. But Snow White, you know, she's so innocent because she keeps on opening the door. The witch disguised as a beggar comes and offers her something and tries to kill her, and the dwarves say, "Don't open the door." And then there she is the next day, like, opening the door. It's like, what are you thinking? I find myself getting irritated at her. You know? It's like, come on, wake up, chicky. Don't just be this beautiful little flimsy, you know, naive thing. Grow a spine.
It reminds me of a friendship I used to have where a person was very likely displaying some envy, and I just couldn't mm-hmm. believe it.
Yeah, yes.
I could not believe it, because from my perspective, like you stated, envy me, like, you know my personal story, the things I've been through, like, you've seen that, like, I just thought mm-hmm. that because this person knew of certain things from my history and, you know, they've experienced certain things with me, that they could never be envious of the situation going well for me or me having mm-hmm. this thing. Like, I felt like, hey, this is like a comeback story. Like, mm-hmm. everyone should be rooting for the underdog. And this person was like, I will seem to be excited for you, but I will secretly not be excited. I will plant seeds of, you know, decharacterizing you. I will make little comments. Yep. I will try to caution you not to do these things that are actually showing themselves to be promising. I will, you know, like, all of those things. And it took me years to see that that is, in fact, what was happening. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't want to believe it. Mm-hmm. I had this story of this person could not think this way because they know me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm so glad you brought that up, because you were describing the little ways that envy can act. I mean, you know, there are the dramatic, you know, stories that maybe we see in movies or something like that. But in interpersonally, it's more likely to be those little seeds of doubt. Or mm-hmm. like you said, maybe, you know, someone who's encouraging you not to do something that might actually be good for you, or mm-hmm. or someone who just makes a little comment that kind of devalues. I'll tell on myself a personal story. When I was envious, my kids were little. I had a friend with little kids. We were, you know, trying to save money and always being very cautious with finances, and so we were not, you know, taking any vacations, and, you know, I guess they had a different financial philosophy or more money or who knows, but she was like, mm-hmm. yeah, we're going to, I don't know, name some fabulous tropical place next week, you know, we're going to the Bahamas
Turks
next
and Caicos.
Week. Okay, Turks and Caicos. Mm-hmm. And what I said to her, I'm embarrassed about this, it's terrible.
Oh, I can't wait to hear it. What is it?
I said, well, I mean, Aren't you just going to be following the same, like, nap and feeding routine in a strange place? or something like that. I said something like that. And I, you know, 20 seconds after I said it, I realized what I'd done. And it was envy. I had devalued this wonderful thing that she was about to do. I had, in the hopes of, I had tried to strip it of value. Like, you're going to go and you're just going to have to put the baby down for a nap. Like, why, you know, why go?
Put them down for a nap and then go sit on the beach. What a waste of your time to go sit and look at this clear water with the sand beneath you. What a waste of time. Who would ever want to do that?
Who would do
that? Who would want to feed their baby by turtles?
but that's what we do when we feel envy. So, and you know, any of us can be in that position, and we can also be on the receiving end of it. And like you said, it's so important to let ourselves know if that's what's happening so that we can protect ourselves. Because if once you saw that was happening, then you put up a little wall with that friend. Maybe you don't share the good news with her or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think that's a wise person would be cautious about what they share with you because they don't want to be deflated in that way. And so it does shape the relationship as to you being the person now that they can't share things with. I remember I had a, we're just going back and forth with our stories, but here we go.
Stories are great.
I remember I had a friend and I was able to travel and she wasn't able to travel. And she would make it a point to ask me about my trip. How was your trip? But then she would get immediately busy and could not listen. So, it would be like, how was your trip? No, put that down. Stop. Oh my gosh. I gotta call you back. The sky just fell in. It's like, what? And it was like a... So she could never say, I didn't ask you, I asked you about your trip, but it's like, you don't actually listen to me talk about the trip.
Right.
So it's like, never a hope you're having a good time. Like, oh, how was your time? Oh my gosh, what's that on TV? It's like, what just happened?
Yeah, that's really interesting, right? Because she knew she should. I mean, at least she was better than I was. I hope you have a terrible time in Turks and Caicos because I'm not going.
Yeah.
But unconsciously, she was kind of sending the message that she couldn't tolerate it.
What should a person do in a situation when they realize that they have displayed some unproductive behaviors as a result of feeling envy in a relationship? Mm-hmm. How do we repair?
Well, I mean, I think recognizing it and apologizing for it if the relationship will tolerate that, saying, you know, I think I've been, you know, saying little barb things, or I said that about, you know, nap time, and I wish I hadn't said that. And I think, honestly, I think I'm just jealous, and I hope you have a great time. You know, I think that would go a super long way, but it is a call to consciousness, right? Because, I mean, and I was aware of what I'd done and I did some work with it, but I think nowadays if that happened to me, I'd do even more work with it. Because the truth is that could have led me into a kind of query about how I felt about decisions that we were making in our marriage, you know, and was I really down with this program of we're not going to take a vacation until the kids are self-sufficient? You know, maybe I hadn't let that part of me get a fair hearing. And so my envy with my friend could have encouraged me to explore something that I wasn't really letting into consciousness because maybe I wanted to avoid conflict with my husband or whatever. I'm sort of making it up at this point because it was so long ago. But
yeah, I'm hearing in that story this idea that when we put off things that we're actually not okay with, we have a level of resentment for the person who is bold enough to do it. Because let's face it, traveling with little kids should be a paid job, right?
Absolutely. Anything with little kids should be a paid
job. Oh my gosh, the compassion I have. My kids are older now, so, you know, they're like upper elementary school. And so when I see people with little toddlers, I'm like, oh, please don't give this dad a hard time. Please don't give this mom a hard time. Like, they're getting it handed to them. We think this crying is outrageous, but they're in their head like, oh my gosh, this baby keep crying, everybody's on the plane annoyed. Yeah, like all of these things are happening. It's such a tough experience for them. So for a person to be bold enough and say, you know what? We're going to the islands despite this baby disliking flights.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like you deserve the umbrella in your drink. I will send one your way, you know, as a courtesy for the boldness of what you did. But yet when we exclude ourselves from that, oh, I can't fly. Oh, I can't do these things. Oh, I have so many projects at home. I can't do this. And we see someone maybe with the same level of something doing it.
Yes.
Yeah, it does invite some uncomfortable feelings. And it is a moment where perhaps we need to evaluate what we're prioritizing and deprioritizing.
And what are we allowing ourselves? I mean, that's such a great example, because I think that when we deny ourselves something, then we're really setting ourselves up to feel envy. Because, I mean, sometimes you just can't, you just don't have the money or whatever. But a lot of times we tell ourselves we can't do something. And then that sets us up to feel really envious when we see someone else, like you said, in a similar situation, allowing themselves to do something that we've denied ourselves.
Yeah.
So there's something too about that, you know, the dad on the plane. The word that comes up for me is open-hearted. And you just kind of gave this invitation for us to embrace the world in an open-hearted way. Like, go out there and, you know, have the vacation, even if it seems silly, you know, to take your kids somewhere, or, you know, any number of other less superficial examples, perhaps. But when we do that, we can be so filled with life and hopefully sometimes some joy that we're less likely to feel envy of other people. And we bring that into encounters. And if other people feel envious of us because we have that, maybe we have the shrewdness to protect ourselves.
Shrewdness. I love how you talked about shrewdness and the vital spark. You know, I think of this episode of the Oprah Show, which I have revisited on her podcast, where there is this, I don't know if he's a detective, a crime reporter, or someone. And he talks about people not listening to their feelings or bypassing their gut instinct about something, like someone being dangerous because they don't want to be perceived as mean. And how when women in situations did this, they were harmed. He shared a story of a woman, you know, she lives off this like back road and not a lot of traffic type thing in a rural area. And she notices this truck in her driveway and she's like, the guy looks weird, but I'm going to go to his truck and I'm going to be really nice to him. And then he ends up trying to attack her. And it's just story after story of people feeling uncomfortable. Feeling uncomfortable in a situation and saying, but I have to be nice.
Yes. Well, especially women feel that way, right? So one of the stories that I mentioned, I think, in that chapter is this young woman that I worked with who was in a public park. And this man came over to her and was, you know, talking to her and trying to engage her in conversation. And it started escalating and he was asking her for her phone number and she would get up and move and he would follow her. And it went on for a while. She's telling the story. And I said, at any point, did you just look at him and said, leave me the fuck alone? Yeah. And she said, well, I didn't want to be rude.
And you know what? The pursuing in dating situations is a really interesting that some women have a lot of anxiety around, like being rude. I remember I was in high school. I'm from Detroit And when I was in high school, I caught the public bus to school. And there was a girl who, she was catching a bus to school. She wasn't on my bus, but she was on a different bus. Did not give this guy her phone number, and he hit her.
Ooh, God.
She had a knot on her forehead. Jesus. We were like in 10th or 11th grade. And I'm often on the bus, there are like guys hitting on you and stuff like that. So from then on, I was like, oh, you can't tell some, like, you literally can't tell someone no if they're trying to pursue you. And you better be very careful about what fake number you give them.
Well, but see,
you know, to fake phone numbers. There was no Instagram DMing at this time. But, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, it must be even worse now if somebody could just look you up on their phone and they're like, this isn't you. You know, at least I had the opportunity to give them the number to movie phone or the local theater or something. It's like, what number do I know by her? 313-377. Yes. But how unfortunate to think that I have to give this person my information or I have to be kind to this person because they can overpower me. Mm-hmm. It would be seen as rude. Like all of these sort of things that we come up with. And it's true. You know, in some instances, it is true. And in some instances, it's not true. People, you know, they take it well. But we as women have a really hard time figuring out when we are safe and when we can be safe with a stranger.
Yeah. And actually, you know, the other part of the story from my client in the park is that he had like an empty bottle. And so there was fear too. Mm-hmm. And it's both of those things, right? You don't want to be rude, but then you also don't want to incite violence against you. But what's great about your story is that you then employ trickster energy by giving a fake number.
Yes.
So there is something about assessing a situation, believing yourself, like letting yourself know what you know. Like, this guy is not, this is not,
I don't want him to call me.
I don't want him to call me.
Please don't call me.
And then deciding in a split second that maybe you can't be really direct, because that's a discernment process, right? Like, sometimes it's good to be really direct. And and other times you're going to have to employ a trick, you know, to set your boundaries or, you know, protect yourself or even get something that you want.
Yes. Is there anything that you'd like to speak about that we didn't bring up? I feel like I can go on and on. Like, both of your books are so amazing. The new book, The Vital Spark, if you all haven't grabbed it, please get a copy. Is there anything that you would like to speak to that maybe we haven't spoke about yet?
Yeah, maybe I'll just talk for a second about kind of how I framed the ideas in The Vital Spark, because you know, it's a really personal book. I mean, I guess every book is kind of a confession, but these are very much things that I have and continue to deal with in my life in terms of kind of finding my authority and agency. And what I realized as I was writing, and then this kind of became, you know, the thesis sentence in a way, is there are qualities like nurturance and warmth and connection and kindness that help us get and stay connected with other people. And those are really, really important. But then there are qualities like assertiveness and aggression and ruthlessness and shrewdness and trickster energy that help us get and stay connected to ourselves. And most, but not by no means all women, have an easier time with that first set of qualities than the second set of qualities. So I wanted to really explore those qualities and talk about different ways that we can incorporate them. Not that we should suddenly become ruthless, but that we have the capacity to be ruthless if the situation calls for it. So this book is not a call to abandon morality and decency, but just to widen our kind of behavioral repertoire.
Yeah.
And one of the ways that I talk about that, this metaphor that just kind of came to me through a source, it's not an original idea, but I was, someone mentioned it to me when I was writing it, and I was like, that's perfect, is that we have to learn to become a worthy opponent. So we can't be naive like Snow White and expect that the world is going to take care of us. we have to figure out where in the situation agency exists. Where can we exert our influence on the situation? Where can we put our finger on the scale so that the outcome maybe turns in our favor, whether it's that there's a strange truck in our driveway or any number of other situations, so that we can kind of take responsibility both for protecting ourselves, but even more so for looking after our own unfolding.
Yeah. Oh, that was so beautiful. Thank you for that. This has been amazing, and I hope that people get something from this conversation. I know that they will. I think the points that you presented in your work it's so helpful and empowering to know that from a therapist's perspective, that there is a level of caring that we should have for ourselves and that we should embody not just those nice qualities, right, but it's also important to embody some wise qualities.
I like that. I like calling them wise qualities. That feels right.
Yeah.
Thank you for that.
Wise qualities. Lisa, can you tell my listeners where they can find you and your work?
Sure. My website is lisamarciano.com, and you can find out about my books there. And I run women's retreats, and I also have an online fairy tale community for women. And that's all there at that website. And then I also have a podcast called This Jungian Life, and that website is www.thisjungianlife.com. Jungian is J-U-N-G-I-A-N.
Yes. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you. This was a lot of fun, Nedra.
You Need to Hear This is an iHeart production hosted by me, Nedra Glover-Tawab. Our executive producer is Joelle Bonique. Our senior producer and editor is Mia Dawn Taylor. Send us a voice memo with your questions about boundaries and relationships at youneedtohearthis@iheartmedia.com. Please be sure to rate our show wherever you listen to it and share this episode with someone who needs to hear this. Talk to you next time.
Do you dream of a healthier life, but education feels out of reach? Trinity School of Natural Health makes holistic education accessible with online programs to fit your busy schedule. Trinity School's Certified Natural Health Professional Program is the perfect entry point to gain foundational knowledge to empower yourself, your family, and your community to live healthier lives. Turn your passion into a career. Visit trinityschool.org for more info now.
Tired of endless diets and weight loss struggles? It's time to say goodbye to frustration and hello to results. Introducing Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD, your breakthrough solution to fight stubborn body fat. Imagine burning fat, balancing glucose levels, and regulating metabolism in just 12 weeks. This unique 2-in-1 product combines the power of 2 clinically studied ingredients in 1 revolutionary formula: berberine, which targets abdominal fat, and OEA, which curbs your appetite. With just 2 capsules a day, Smart Metabolic Burn by BrainMD can kickstart your metabolism, fight stubborn body fat, especially that pesky abdominal fat, and support your weight management journey. Right now, save over 30% on Smart Metabolic Burn at GetSmartBurn.com. The lowest price anywhere. That's GetSmartBurn.com. Don't delay. Transform your life with Smart Metabolic Burn from BrainMD. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. Our products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union, a savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.